Welcome to the Negotiations Ninja podcast, where we develop and deliver the most engaging negotiation content and training in the world. We host negotiation experts, business people, and entrepreneurs, and discuss what works, what doesn't work, and how we can improve our negotiation skills. Friends, thank you so much for joining me on the Negotiations Ninja podcast. Welcome. You've got Mark here. Today is an interview with my friend Josh Weiss. He is just an incredible guy. He leads the Harvard Negotiation Project with William Ury at Harvard University, and he developed an amazing negotiation master's program at Bayport University. More importantly, he's just super, super knowledgeable about negotiation. I mean, when it comes to this discipline, I count him amongst one of the greats. And he has written a great new book, and I really, really liked it. I got the opportunity to read it. He sent me an e-copy, and it's called The Book of Real World Negotiations. And it takes these stories from these amazing negotiators from all over the place and relates how the theory actually applies to the real world. An incredible book. He's got everything from corporate negotiations to M&A to hostage negotiations. Everything's included. And I was blown away by this book. I really recommend that you go pick it up. I recommend that you connect with Josh. He's a wonderful guy. Josh, thank you so much for being on the show once again. Folks, enjoy this interview. I know you will. Josh, we made it. How are you?
I'm good, my friend. How are you?
I'm so happy to have you here, man. Thank you so much for being on the show again.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure.
I am stoked to talk about your new book because I think it's quite exciting. Having read through most of it, I've got quite a number of questions for you. So we're going to get into that soon. But before we do, maybe you could tell the listeners a bit about who you are and what you do.
So I spend a lot of time working in the world of leadership, negotiation, dealing with conflict. I really have sort of three buckets. So the first one is that I co-direct a project at Harvard with William Ury called the Global Negotiation Initiative, where we work on, as it might seem from the title, negotiations around the world and conflicts from an international point of view. My second bucket is that I'm director of a master's degree program in leadership and negotiation at a school out in Western Massachusetts called Bayport University. And that master's program actually is all online. And so something that's near and dear to my heart, because I actually was able to create it from scratch, which doesn't happen a lot. So really love doing that. And then finally, I have my own consulting company. So I do a lot of work with agencies, entities from across the board, from the federal government to the UN to companies, nonprofits, universities, you name it. And so it's a really great mix of a number of different things. So life is busy, but enjoyable.
And you've written an incredible new book, which is coming out soon.
I have written a book. I'm glad that you think it's incredible.
So tell us about the book. What is it all about? Like, why this book? Why now?
Yeah, well, actually, it sort of harkens back to the days when I was working full-time at Harvard, and I used to go to these faculty dinners that were fascinating, and people there, and all these amazing negotiators would sit and share these stories about negotiation and how they helped parties to reach agreement or how they, as a negotiator, reached agreement. And I always sat there and I thought, this is really fascinating. And the only people that are really gaining these insights are the 25 of us sitting around here. And I thought, you know, if I have an opportunity someday to do something like this, I'd really like to share this with the world. And that's really how this came about. And I've come to believe very deeply in the power of stories. You know, if you and I talk, we can debate a theory or a concept or an idea. But when I tell you a story, there's not a whole lot of debate. There's questions about understanding the nuances and things like that. But it's a story and it's real and it happened. And so when people have skepticism toward negotiation or its value or its applicability in lots of cases, and I noticed when I would go to parties and talk to people at the gym or whatever it was, that people would often say to me, oh, negotiation, yeah, it's interesting. And the best negotiated solutions are where everybody leaves the table a little unhappy and all these mythologies. And I thought, you know, I could spend a lot of time talking to people about this and why I might disagree with that. But I thought, you know, instead, let me just show people what these things look like in real life. And I was fortunate because when I started to talk to Wiley about this endeavor, at first, I didn't actually think they would be interested. And then when they said they were, I thought, uh-oh, I have some of my own cases, but I don't have enough to write a book. So I started to reach out to people. And, you know, one of the challenges, of course, is that, you know, there are a lot of sensitivities when it comes to negotiation. And so I thought, I don't know if people are going to want to share. But the vast majority of people were willing because I explained to them that the names and the people in particular aren't so critical. It's what did you do? How did you get through a really difficult negotiation with creativity, with problem solving, et cetera? And how can we share that with the world so people really understand the value of negotiation and how it can be used in so many different ways to solve the problems that confront us on a daily basis? So that's it. And to me, stories, I really love stories. I mean, I hearken back to when I was a kid and, you know, Dr. Seuss and Curious George were the two characters that so resonated with me. And in many ways, I think back to them a lot as I do my work because the lessons of those things, of curiosity, of thinking differently, like Dr. Seuss taught us to do, are embedded in really good stories.
Yeah. It's funny. This is like the third conversation I've had this week about the power of story and how it penetrates a deeper part of our brain. And we learn a much deeper lesson when something is told in a story format and it has sort of the hero's arc, you know, and to tell something in a story is to almost make it solidified in that person's mind. And they'll remember it for longer. Theories are great, like you said, but without the story, it becomes a lot more challenging to remember. And something that I think about the best professors or the best instructors that I've ever learned from is they're able to relate the theory to the real world and show the practicality of that. And this is something that I tell our students all the time is, if it's not applicable, it's fairly useless, right? I mean, theory is great and all, don't get me wrong. But if we can't apply it, then it becomes very challenging to actually remember and learn and use. And so let's start, because there's a few chapter titles that I absolutely love in your book. The one that I think is really important to begin with is chapter 3, where you talk about, hey, you've got an agreement. Now, can you make it better?
Yeah.
So many people stop, right? They feel like once they've got an agreement, there's no opportunity necessarily to optimize that agreement over the course of the relationship. Talk to us about what this chapter is all about and why you think this is important.
Yeah, well, I mean, this idea comes in some ways from a practical theory, to pick up on your point, by a guy named Howard Rafa. Howard Rafa was a Harvard Business School professor, came in many ways created the concept of BATNA. But Howard was always sort of looking at how people negotiated and were they really maximizing value? That was his big thing, was are people really being creative enough? And in many ways, what he did was he sort of set out to prove to a lot of people that their focus on compromise was misguided and that they were leaving a tremendous amount of value on the table. And he called this whole idea of sort of once parties reach an agreement and asking the question, can you make it better? He called that post-settlement settlement, which is kind of the least sexy name you could possibly think of. But the idea was really, can we explore and see if there's something we've left out? And it's interesting because in this scenario, the story that I tell happened to be, I was at a negotiation training and I started talking to some of the people at this company and they had just reached a deal to re-up sort of with a company that they had been working with for a few years and it had gone well. And so they had just been able to reach another deal. And I said to them, essentially, you know, that's great and congratulations, but did you think about any way of making it better? Because really, in many ways, what they did was they took the previous deal and they just said, well, let's just continue it.
Let's just renew.
Yeah. And I said, did you ask the question now that you've worked with these folks for a couple of years, like, is there a way to make this better? We've probably learned some things about each other over time. We've built the relationship. So can we do things a little differently? Is there some value to be added? And these two folks were in their mid to late 20s. And at first they were a little bit confused as to what it was that I was asking them. They were like, but we have a deal. Like, why would we want to do anything more? And I said, well, yes, that's great. And you know, that's sort of in your back pocket. I mean, right now that's kind of your baton as you already have a deal, but why not ask the question, is there any way to make this better for you and us? And when you ask that question, because it's a question that really has no pressure to it, right? You already have a deal. So it enables the creative thinking. And that's one of the things that when you read most of the cases in this book, that's what comes through, is that when people are able to let go of feeling like they have to defend a position or things along those lines, and can start to think creatively, that's when breakthroughs happen. And so in this scenario, a similar kind of thing happened where they picked up the phone and called their counterpart and said, by the way, we were wondering, is there anything else that you guys would like in this deal that would actually make it better for you? And lo and behold, there was. And on the flip side, they were able to ask for a few things that mattered to them, so that you go from a deal that's good or maybe better than good to great by asking that question and exploring in a way where people's minds are already free from constraints. And I find, like I said, in most of the cases, when people were able to kind of free themselves from their traditional ways of thinking, they could find solutions to these really difficult problems. And that was the story that I really wanted to tell here, is that when you listen to people and take these negotiations, there's a way. The question is, how do you get there? How do you do this? And I think the cases really point to the how very nicely.
Hey, listeners, I want to tell you about another company that I run called Content Callout. It is a thought leadership brand marketing company. Now, what does that mean? It means that we take you as an executive or entrepreneur, a leader of a small or medium-sized business, and we turn you into a thought leader online. We take your personal brand and we amp it up to 11. So that you can lead with confidence, knowing that people will recognize you, recognize your brand, and recognize your business because of the thought leadership approach that you've taken on social media through content creation and content distribution, as well as engaging with all of your following online. How do you get involved in this? Easy. Just go to contentcallout.com/get-started, and you will see there three different options that will allow you to take your thought leadership brand for yourself and for your business to the next level. We are super excited to talk to you about this. We've seen some massive growth with the businesses that we've been working with. Very, very exciting time for us. Look at that. We appreciate it. Now back to your show.
Yeah, I love the idea in negotiation of hypothetical thinking, because it frees people, like you say, from the burden of pressure. For some reason, if you approach the situation and you just go, look, hypothetically, if we were going to make this better, how would we make this better? Right? No one's on the hook. I'm not going to hold you to anything. Let's just start throwing darts at a dartboard and see what happens.
Yeah.
And that seems to come up with the most incredible and amazing creative solutions that I've seen. And even in the role-playing situations that we take people through, it's like, okay, just start throwing out some hypotheticals, right? You're not constrained. Let's just say, for example, you weren't constrained by the organizational structure that you're in right now. How would you structure it differently? Well, we'd probably buy this building over here and house these people over there and do all this. And then I say to them, okay, well, why don't you do that? Well, it would cost too much money. What would you need to do to make it work for you? Well, we'd need X, Y, and Z. Okay, so why don't you do that? Well, we need to do this, this, and this before we can do that. And I'd say, okay, well, why don't you do that? And so we start digging down this hole of like, all of these options are available to you. And actually, you know what the solutions are and you know how to get there. It might require a little bit of extra work, but the amount of value that you can get out of the deal as a result of this significantly outweighs the amount of work that's involved in getting there.
I think that's absolutely right. And I think some of the other cases in the book demonstrate that as well. But what your point highlights is that some of the biggest challenges we face are in our mindset and how we're viewing and looking at a problem. You know, my colleague William Urey wrote that book, Getting to Yes, many years ago. But he wrote a book more recently, a few years back, called Getting to Yes with Yourself. Mm-hmm. And it's really all about, you know, sometimes the hardest negotiator is the one staring you back in the mirror. And the fact you're limiting your own thinking. You know, a lot of times people will say to me, well, we can't do that. And my sort of favorite retort to that is, I'm very clear on what you can't do. Can you tell me what you could do? And that immediately gets people to sort of say, whoa, wait a minute. I hadn't really thought about that because I'm so busy telling you all the reasons why I can't do this that I haven't thought about, well, under what conditions could I do that, right? And then how hard are those conditions to meet? Just like what you were saying.
Love that. One of the things that you mentioned in your example in the book is the value of relationship. And yes, I mean, we've done this deal. We've essentially renewed the old deal because we already had a relationship. And then there was the challenge, okay, how do we make this better? Strong relationships are pivotal to long-term agreements making sense. And in fact, in one of the chapters in your book, you talk about how this group of people had a bad BATNA, but they had a strong relationship. And they were able to use that relationship to really sidestep a lawsuit and come to something that was mutually beneficial. Can you talk about the value of a relationship and maybe how it relates to the case in that chapter?
Yeah, first of all, I think you've articulated that really well. You know, a lot of times people don't understand. I mean, I think intuitively people get that if you have a better relationship, perhaps you can do different things. And one of the points in the book that I really try to emphasize is that in order to meet your short-term needs, you have to sacrifice the long-term relationship.
Right.
And I really want people to understand that that's not true. And in fact, if you do that, you engage in self-defeating behavior, that you have to find that fine line that you walk. Because if you damage the reputation, then there won't be any further negotiations likely, or it's going to take a lot to get back to those kinds of things. You know, relationships like trust are very hard to build and easy to break. The chapter that you're referring to is a scenario where there was a company that had been bought out by a much larger entity. And when the company got bought out, they were, as the reality of working at a less entrepreneurial, much bigger sort of behemoth kind of company set in, they realized how very unhappy they were.
Right.
And so in that scenario, they sort of decided that they were going to leave and wanted to go back to where they were. And, you know, there were nuances that you could pick up in the case. But in essence, the bigger company and the folks that had brought them in, they had a very good relationship with those folks, which is why they decided to join the company in the first place. When they broke off and tried to start another company, the representatives, the people that they had this good relationship, flew to meet with them and said, look, this isn't going to work. You can't do this. You now are a direct competitor to us. And if we have to, we're going to sue you. And the threat of that was real, was very real. And as the person involved shared with me, the only thing that prevented that lawsuit from happening was their initial reaction. So when they said, we're going to sue you guys, if they had just said, well, okay, sue us, do what you got to do, that's the end, right? But they said, well, hang on a minute. We think there's a way that we can both do this. We're willing to do this in a way where we don't compete. In fact, we can collaborate. Would you hear us out? And as the folks involved shared with me, the answer would have been no if they didn't have this kind of a relationship where they work with folks. So the relationship opened the door just enough where they said, look, let's go get lunch and let's see what we can come up with. And on the back of a napkin, they started to work on, you know, in a no pressure kind of way. I mean, there was pressure because there was a lawsuit looming, but in a no pressure kind of way, they started to construct a deal that actually enabled them to still leave, but benefited them all. And what they said to me very clearly was, without the relationship, we would have never gotten even to that point. And it was just that point that, frankly, all you need is that small opening that says, yeah, okay, we're at least willing to talk about it. Right. Well, then people now step back. They kind of think a little differently about what might work and what might be possible. But it's leveraging the relationship, particularly when you get into those difficult situations like sue me or don't sue me, right? Where you can at least hold at bay some of those really drastic actions because you can say, hey, we've worked together. Like, let's just hold on a minute. Maybe this is where we're going to end up. But maybe it's not. Maybe there's another way. And that's where the creativity kicked in, et cetera.
What that also tells me is the undervalued power of breaking bread with someone, you know, like to go and share a meal. There's something historic and just about how we share resources with each other and the walls that that breaks down. I love the idea of being able to share a meal with someone because it sort of harkens back to a time when those kind of resources were scarce. And for me to share something as intimate as food with you was for me to share life-giving resources with you. And I think that still resonates with us. I think there's still a part of us that really appreciates it when someone takes that step of trust in the relationship.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, it's funny because a lot of times I'll talk to people and they'll say to me, you know, the most useful times during our negotiations are the coffee breaks. And I'll say, well, okay, if that's the case, what's going on here? Right. So I did a talk to the Association of Conflict Resolution a few years ago, and it was basically the talk was using the power of place to deal with conflict. And one of the things that I've learned is that not just food and things like that, but place matters. And, you know, when you can take the formality out of negotiation, that really helps to free people's thinking, right? So a lot of times when I need to negotiate with somebody, I'll say, can we go for a walk or can we go have lunch instead of can we meet in your office where we're both very professional and we're going to limit ourselves right away. And so, you know, one of the points that I made at that ACR talk was if the coffee breaks are so valuable, like let's make the whole thing a coffee break. We have to flip the problem on its head and say, what is it about the coffee breaks? It's the informality. It's the, can we just, now that we're out and we're not in a room with 10 other people, tell me what's really going on. Yeah. And when you do that, people's guard come down. Then it's like, okay, so this person's interested in how we can get there, not how they can trap me or how they can take advantage of the situation. And it's a different dynamic, it's a different feel. So I would encourage people to think, how do you make the whole thing a coffee break?
Yeah, I mean, speaking of food, you've likened hostage negotiations to onions in your book. So tell me about the layers. Tell me about onions and hostage negotiations.
Well, you know, when I started this, I do have a friend who used to be the head of the NYPD hostage negotiation unit. So I learned some things about it. But then I met another guy who's a hostage negotiator, and we started to talk. And I said, look, you know, I'd really like to include some cases from that world because I think people don't understand it. And I think it'd be really valuable to understand it. So I started to, he ended up putting me in touch with three different folks, really wonderful hostage negotiators, people who have done this for quite a long time. And what became clear to me were a couple of things. The first is that in those negotiations, you know, there's a whole team of people that are involved in that. And not only is there a team of people involved in the negotiation, but there's a whole team of people involved writ large in these kind of situations. You've got the SWAT teams over there, you have the local authorities over there, and the federal authorities sometimes here. And so it's an orchestration in one sense. But the reason that I talked about onions and hostage negotiations, because basically, you know, you have the one or two sort of lead negotiators. And usually what happens is you have one negotiator talking to the hostage taker at any moment, and you have another sort of sitting there, kind of sitting on the balcony, if you will, with a bird's eye view, passing notes and making suggestions. And if that person gets bogged down, they can transition it over to the other negotiator. Or if you start to get too close to somebody or too far away from the hostage taker, there's a way of saying, hey, let's make a change, like a shift might be a good thing. But then you have another layer of a person who's not involved in the negotiation at all, but is kind of the ultimate decision maker, who's sitting back there even higher on the balcony, who's giving you the thumbs up or the thumbs down on what you're doing. And then you add in, for example, one of the points that folks were making very strongly with me was that a lot of people who are hostage takers nowadays have mental health issues. And negotiators are not trained to deal with mental health. They're trained to negotiate. So now mental health experts are part of that team. So there's another layer of the onion. So when you start to peel it back, you start to say, wow, there's a lot of people involved here. This requires a lot of coordination and a lot of understanding of when to say tap out and say maybe it's time for a change, or, you know, are we losing this person, etc. The other thing that I love, one of the quotes that one of the guys told me is, you know, hostage takers have a perception that someone's going to get on a bullhorn and say, you've got 10 minutes to come out. And the quote was basically, they're expecting to get Arnold Schwarzenegger and we show up as Mr. Rogers. And what they meant by that is that the key to hostage negotiations is building rapport with the hostage taker, which nobody would really guess. If you ask the average person, what do you think is the best way to do this? It's, well, threaten them, show them the SWAT team, and then break the door down, right? Absolutely the opposite, which is they have to trust you enough to say, I don't think they're going to harm me. You know, the worst case is not going to happen here, and I need to trust that person enough to come out, to get me out of this dilemma. Because I think in many ways, at least in two of the hostage negotiations, it was very clear that the hostage taker didn't want to be doing what they were doing, but they had gone down a road and they were stuck. They didn't know how to get out of it. They had to save face. And yet they needed someone to help them do that. And that's what these hostage negotiators did. So I think there's a lot of layers, not only from the amount of people involved, but also the issues involved and what does it take to really get somebody to kind of come out.
Yeah, I love the whole idea of team-based negotiations and the way that most law organizations, their approach to team-based negotiations, having those different layers, especially that first layer of having the additional negotiators so that if you get deal fatigue, you know, you've got someone who can sub in. And so many people view deal fatigue as this shot to the ego or that you quote unquote cannot do it. And for whatever reason in the corporate world, I think we've put a lot of ego into it. You get deal fatigue, that means you can't do it. And then, you know, your ego is attached to it, but that's not it at all. Like deal fatigue is a thing, right? You're going to get worn down. Negotiation is inherently emotional. There's a point where you may need to tap out and bring someone in to help. And I find that especially in corporate negotiations, we place far too much of our own personal ego, or we attach far too much of our own personal ego to the outcome of the deal. And, you know, like we are responsible versus like collectively as a team, we are responsible. And I really think that that's a major failing in a lot of corporate negotiations.
Well, that and sort of the mindset, I mean, that goes along with what you're saying, you know, the mindset of the first person that has to get up to go to the bathroom loses. It's like,
right.
Really?
Yeah, exactly. Like, come on, guys. Really?
Yeah. I mean, if they cannot take that approach in a hostage negotiation, I think we cannot do that in a corporate setting around a business deal.
Yeah, I think there's a lot that we can learn from the hostage guys about how to approach negotiations strategically, especially like quick rapport building, which I think hostage negotiators are amazing at. Like, how do you develop that rapport very, very quickly in a short amount of time? Brilliant at that. I think that's amazing what they do. Well, listen, Josh, I am blown away by this book. I am absolutely super excited for you to release it. For the listeners, where do they find out more about the book and where do they find out more about you?
So the book, they can find, you know, the most popular places on Amazon, but they can also get it through Wiley or Barnes & Noble. It's definitely out there in a lot of different mediums. It's on pre-order now. It hits the shelves on August 25th. So if you order it now, it'll show up at your doorstep around that time. And in terms of more on me, I do have a website, which is just joshuannweiss.com, and it has the different books that I've written and other things that I do. And yeah, welcome people's feedback and thoughts on the book as well. If they do go down that road, I'd love to hear from them and to hear. I'm hoping that people will be interested in sharing their own stories with me going forward. You know, I've already begun a little bit of a conversation with Wiley about maybe a version 2 of this. And I think that for me, and you were mentioning this before about teachers, and from my point of view, teachers, trainers, anybody really, these stories are kind of gold because people can just resonate with, they can just get it. And I know there are more of these out there. And so I'm hoping that this will encourage people to share these stories and help us all to learn how to become effective negotiators through creativity much more than compromise. Because I think the vast majority of cases in the book demonstrate that.
Love that. For the listeners, just so that you know, I will be linking out to all of these resources in the show notes. So you can find those on www.negotiations.ninja. Just go to the podcast section and you'll be able to find these on the episode with Josh. Josh, again, thank you so much for being here, man. I love talking to you about this stuff. Your wisdom is greatly appreciated.
Well, thank you, Mark. I appreciate the time with you as well. And you've got a great platform. So thank you.
Hey friends, thanks so much for listening to this episode. If you enjoyed it, please share it with friends and colleagues so that they can benefit from it as well. If you find Negotiations Ninja Podcast worthy, please go onto iTunes and give us a cool rating with a nice review. We certainly appreciate every single one that we get because it helps us to understand who is listening, how they're listening, and what it is they like. If there's something that you would like me to discuss around negotiation, influence, or persuasion, give me a shout. You know how to reach me on social media, or you can get me on my website, which is www.negotiations.ninja.